Okay, thank you, Jack. Unique thing about this section, this seminar, is the ladies are somewhere else. Came out with my wife, and she was encouraging me a little bit. I remember that story. You know, I used to pastor in New York State. I was in New York for about 15 years at First Baptist in Johnson City. And during that time, Mario Cuomo was governor. Some of you may remember when he was governor in New York. And one time he was speaking to the New York Press Club, which is a tough group to speak to. And his wife was trying to encourage him, and she said, hey, I know that's a tough group, and it can be intimidating. Don't try to be charming and witty and intellectual. Just be yourself. And I had a similar thing from Jeannie. I do want to just be myself, and that's why I wanted you to get down here, and I wanted to get on the floor. And I want to share with you about evangelism strategy in the church. I recognize as I look around, I know many of you, some of you I don't know, that many of you are doing effective evangelism in your churches. You have a strategy. And you could, better than I can, come up here and share about evangelism strategy. Maynard asked me to do that. We're working on some things that we think are important in this area. And I hope it'll just be an encouragement to you in some way. What I'd like to do, I want to share four major areas. There are four points on this outline. Does everybody have a green outline sheet? I have some extras, Dave. I have a few more down here. Does anybody need one of these green sheets? I'm going to go ahead and... You know, you can't keep score without a scorecard. And maybe you just want to have stuff to start fires this winter in your fireplace, but at least you have something in your hands. But anyway, I just want to, as a fellow learner, share with you some of the areas of strategy that we're involved in here at, thanks Jack, here in our ministry back in Flint, and I hope that'll be an encouragement to you. Look at the title, Easy as Pie. You know, I'm going to share a pie diagram, but the title is misleading. To put into practice evangelism strategy probably isn't easy. I needed something that fit the pie, so I had to come up with some title. But I hope it is easy to understand. I hope the overall strategy is easy to grasp so that based on your circumstances and your setting, you can put into practice some of the basics of evangelism strategy that we do that might help you in some way to make that happen. Let's jump in. You have the outline in front of you, and I have a clicker to move through this thing. I want to talk, first of all, quickly. I just want to remind you of the need. Now, I doubt any of you would disagree with me, maybe some would, that there is a great need in our churches for more proactive, intentional outreach and evangelism strategies. You know the statistics, and I don't have the real specific one, but I've read them, and I read it just recently in Rev Magazine, about the average church in America and about the totality, and this includes churches that are not Bible preaching churches, but like 75 or 80% of the churches in America are plateaued or declining numerically. Now, we admit that numerical growth is not the only kind of growth we ought to pay attention to. And there are a lot of reasons why a lot of churches are plateaued or declining. But at least in some measure, they are that way because of a failure, at least for Bible preaching churches, churches of our persuasion, a failure to take seriously putting into practice proactively, intentionally, evangelism strategies in our church. You know, we talked about it as a pastoral team. And I get together with the guys who are part of our pastoral team, and we talk about some things we wish we were growing in some areas more, and we talk about that. And I've said just recently in a staff meeting, I said, you know, the bottom line is we all need to be about personal evangelism. You know what? There's a lot of people to reach in Flint. We have 250 Baptist churches in Genesee County alone. 250 churches, a lot of different persuasions. A lot of them are Bible preaching churches. But there's a lot of people. There are a lot of people to reach in Flint. There are a lot of lost people. A lot of people to touch and lives to reach. And so, the challenge is before us in our area, in this area. recognizing the need. I think the problem is this, I'll probably get personal in some of this discussion. We know what our convictions are, and the church perspective is among regular Baptists. You know what? We're Bible-preaching churches. We're committed to our theology. I'm going to talk more about that in a minute. And I believe in a theology or a doctrinally driven ministry. We are not the same as the Baptist Bible Fellowship. You know, there are good brothers, you know, good Bible-preaching churches in many ways. But there's a soul-winning emphasis that's a little different than us. And often on Sunday mornings, it's about soul-winning, and there are often bus ministries. And there is a general, and I don't mean to be judgmental, but there's a general belief in a soul-saving station mentality for the church. We don't have that, do we? We're committed to teaching the Bible. I'm committed in our worship times on the Lord's Day to focus on saved people. You know, I'm never going to imbibe the mega church mentality, all the seeker things, because it's not a biblical model. The model really is that the church is an equipping center for believers. We want to be sensitive to lost people. I want to be relevant for the lost person that comes in. But the reality is, the biblical model for the church is, in our worship, it's focused on believers and growing them and training them. But here's what happens to us. We're so focused on edification, we have lost our passion and our strategic commitment to evangelism and discipleship. And we kind of feel like, look, we've got orthodox theology, we've got all that stuff in place, and we've got great faithful people, and we've developed a fortress mentality in our churches. Rather than looking out, we tend to be more ingrown. We need to balance our edification. I was taught in Bible school. I went to a good Bible college and seminary, but I think I was taught the edification purpose for the church. It's not the purpose of the church. If you're told that, you're told wrong. The purpose of the church is not to fill our notebooks with a lot of worthwhile stuff. It's edification for a purpose beyond just knowing facts about God and the Bible. What good is all that information if our people don't use it in life and impact this world till Jesus comes? It's edification for outreach. Yeah, it's edification, but that's not it alone. It's following up on teaching so the people are trained. You know what the church is? It's spiritual boot camp. That's what it is. The church is an equipping center for worldwide impact, locally and globally. And I think we have a great need. I think we probably have, in some ways, in our desire to be theologically orthodox and fundamental, and we maybe have developed that fortress mentality. Years ago, I read Joe Aldrich. He wrote an article called The Lamb Pack in Discipleship Journal. He said, if we visualize the church as a fortress, our strategy, our vision, our measurements of success will reflect that perception. Is the church a haven until heaven, a refuge until the rapture? The average local church, listen, this is interesting. I think he's true, it's convicting. He's right. This is true. The average local church is like a department store where the employees show up at 7:30 a.m., march in, lock the doors, and sell merchandise to each other all day. I think there's a need. We need to recognize the need. Now, there's a little bit of foundation. If you want to do effective evangelism, there is some foundation. And some of these are going to be obvious. Let me move quickly. Biblical convictions. There's a place to write down some of these things. It does include our commitment to solid theology related to the reality of heaven and hell and the lostness of mankind and the exclusivity of Jesus' claims and the gospel itself. We're committed to those great theological truths. But there's something else conviction-wise, and I've already hinted at it. I'm talking about the need. What must drive us in this evangelism endeavor and a strategy is a belief in the core significance of the Great Commission to what we do. I grew up in a Bible-preaching church. It wasn't a Baptist church. And this is probably true of so many of our churches. In the Constitution, it lists, you know, the guidelines for how churches run and all that, but it has a place for the purpose. And under the purpose in all of our constitutions, if you have a thing, it's Matthew 28, 19 and 20. It's the purpose of the church. But, you know, the church I grew up in, it was a fortress. We never really did that. We believe in that. Oh, yes, Matthew 28, 19 and 20. But we don't really take it seriously or proactively. here's the thing. And we're not going to turn there. I just want you to think about this with me, okay? When I think about biblical convictions, think about this. There are two halves of the Great Commission. I'm not talking about it if you diagrammed it. If you diagram it from the Greek, there's a lead verb and three participles. I'm talking about if you just look at it in its verse structure, thematically, it divides in two halves. Verse 18 and 19, it says all authority, and then it says go and make disciples, baptizing them. And then the second part, second half, begins with the word teaching. Teaching them to observe all things. Lo, I am with you always. So 18, 19, 20, and 21. Two halves. First half has to do with initiating the gospel and confirming through baptism decisions as you move toward discipleship. Second half is teaching them to observe all things. We're real heavy on the second half of the Great Commission. We're probably all doing well in the second half of the Great Commission. But I submit to you that a biblical conviction must be that the first half is foundational to the second half. The first half, making disciples, baptizing them. Jeannie and I were talking on the way out about how many adults we've baptized in our church in the last year. You know, that's kind of a good factor to consider if you are thinking in terms of seriousness about the first half of the Great Commission. So when you think about the Great Commission, think about the first half as well as the second half. It's a biblical conviction with us with regard to this foundation. Leadership, commitment, and vision. I'm talking about pastors and deacons. We call our pastors and deacons our leadership team. Our leadership team, pastors and deacons. And I take time with our leadership team to just get them on board with outreach and discipleship as a priority. You know, this is a foundation. If you want to do effective evangelism strategy, it involves, you know, taking seriously the responsibility to train leaders so they understand the importance of all this. What I just shared about the first and the second part of the Great Commission, I want them to understand that, how important it is to us, because it drives so much of what we do. I want my leaders. So it involves, if you're a pastor in here, it involves teaching your people about what's important and understanding the core significance of Christ's words and the need to be about this thing called evangelism. You know what? We take it really seriously, and our men have bought into our evangelism commitment. We have a staff person that just does outreach and discipleship. Not a lot of churches have a single person on a ministry team. Now, we're at a church that has a multiple staff. In the three churches I've been in, I've had three churches in almost 30 years of pastoral ministry. And in those three churches I've been in, I've always asked for an outreach and evangelism pastor because it's core to everything we do. And they're not doing music, and they have some others. Some may help in men's ministry, different things. But their core responsibilities are outreach and evangelism. And I had to convince the leadership that this was worth the funding for a staff person to be involved in outreach and evangelism. Now, that person doesn't do it for us. It's the other thing I train. This is not a guy that, okay, he can assuage our consciences, he'll do evangelism for us. He's about training and motivating the people of our church and guiding us in our strategy of outreach and evangelism. And I've looked for guys who understand what I'm about to share with you and say, can you, under my leadership, help us make these kinds of things happen? And according to their own personality and gifts, we develop this kind of strategy. But there's got to be a leadership commitment, and then that follows the congregational consensus. The congregation will follow the leaders when they say, hey, you know, these guys are about reaching out. There's a phrase we use in our church about this. You know, we talk about people in the church getting it. We just had a conversation recently about a newer person in our church that gets it. What do I mean by that? Well, we have this open house. I'll tell you more about this later, but we have an open house every August. And we gave away 400 backpacks into the public system, and we had people come who wanted free backpacks. They had stuff in them, a total of about $10,000 worth of school supplies. And we gave it away. We announced it. We had it assigned. We put it in the school paper. And we had about 500 visitors that day. But it was also like an open time to have friends and guests come. And there were some families in the church. They weren't part of the school system thing, but they got it. What did they get? They said, this is an outreach event. This is a time to bring my co-worker, my neighbor, my friend to church. You have special events. You have a Christmas program. You have we'll talk about some of these events. You have some of these events. Some people in your church, if you train, they'll get it. This is not about just me enjoying the Christmas theme. This is about reaching out to lost people. We don't do cantatas anymore. We don't do things to entertain the Christian public. We're about outreach in our special events. We're thinking, who can we reach for Christ? And our people are getting it. They're thinking, wow. We use a two-word phrase often with our people. And there's a couple phrases that I try to keep in front of them. One is invest and invite. Invest and invite. Invest and invite. Invest in somebody that's lost. It's a neighbor, a friend, a relative. Invest in their lives. Be a friend. Help them out. Spend time with them. Invest and invite. And invite means invite them to Christ yourself, but also you have the opportunity to invite them. We have enough special events around that if you're working with somebody and maybe you're not as certain about how to share your faith with them, or in addition to what you have shared, invite them to an event, an outreach event, like an open house, like a dinner theater we have at Christmas time. So you invest and you invite. I'm trying to teach our people, invest and invite. Another thing I always say, to ask somebody in our church, they know they hear this all the time, I always say, face the door. Face the door. Our people understand, because I'm always talking about facing the door. What's that mean? That means we're not forming a holy huddle in our backs to the people that come in, sometimes in a literal sense, but we're looking out the door to our community and how we can impact our community. Face the door. You ever been to some kind of a reception or special event at somebody's house and you didn't really know anybody? Maybe it had to do with one of your children's friends, and they had some type of reception. You're really a newcomer. You don't know anybody. And you arrive at the door, and everybody's in little groups all over the place, and nobody's really. You might have the host greet you, but everybody's kind of by themselves. That's the way it is in church sometimes. Newcomers come, and everybody's in their little groups. Nobody's facing the door. Sometimes, literally, they're not, but even then, people can have, you can have greeters. You should have something like that. But where people are thinking, you know what? There's some people around that I don't know. There's some people in my neighborhood that I don't know. I'm going to face the door. Church isn't a holy huddle. It's not a, you know, holding out till the Lord comes type of a thing so the world doesn't contaminate me. I'm facing the door. So I'm teaching our people. Our deacons are part of it. We're trying to train our people that we're committed to outreach. That's important. And then healthy church ministry. Can I just make a quick comment about this? Some of the stuff may seem like it's not as important, but it really is. Healthy church ministry. You know, I hope you are reading. You ought to be reading widely. I was really bothered by the Evangelical Missions Quarterly in the last issues where they have tried to say, and this is a great Missions Quarterly. If you want to stay up on missions, I've subscribed to it for years. But it really bothered me recently that they tried to say that global outreach isn't really about church planting. And I read that and I'm thinking, these guys have not read the same New Testament that I read. I mean, there is a general demeaning of local church, but I want you to know that it's my conviction, and I think the New Testament bears it out, that God's plan for global impact with the gospel is through local churches.
Absolutely.
And I still believe that the incubator for growth and movement toward maturity in a new believer's life is through the local church. It's not an action group. It's not a community Bible study. It's through churches. We need to see people get saved and inculcate them with the truth through a local church. So what does that mean? That means that our local churches need to be alive and well. The best thing to keep in mind if you're preparing for intentional outreach is your church needs to be healthy. Now, we like to talk about church health rather than church growth. You know, if you're healthy, you're going to grow if you're healthy. There are a lot of things you can read about church health and all that kind of thing. But at churches, you know, I'll tell you, I also get the Campus Crusades Worldwide Challenge magazine. And Crusade, just this last issue of Crusade, they talked about establishing spiritual movements around the world. I'm like, spiritual movements? And then they even say, and Christ said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. And they quote the Great Commission. But they're afraid to say, church. Yeah. I'd probably write the editor and say, you know, man. I'm not trying to demean these. You know, I think there's things we can learn from Crusade. There's certainly, you should subscribe to the Evangelical Missions Quarterly. I think there's, if you want to be informed about global outreach, that's a publication you should read. But read it with your eyes open. Understand that there is a general move away from local churches, and our churches need to be strong. Here's some quick healthy things about churches. I think healthy churches are characterized by solid Bible teaching and preaching. I could add teaching to that emphasis. I mentioned earlier, we are a doctrinally driven ministry, and I am uncompromising in theological areas. I think methodology needs to flex. I would probably flex it where you would be uncomfortable. But I'm not going to flex theology. I believe I am a Baptist by conviction. I refuse to compromise my Baptist distinctives. I communicate them to our people. I am a fundamentalist in theology. I am premillennial, pre-tribulational. I am non-charismatic. And I'm not afraid to say that I don't think the Bible teaches that God gives those gifts for today, and I think it can be defended biblically, and I'm not going to compromise it. I am committed to those. And I think if it means that we're not going to explode in growth because I happen to communicate, you know, it happened just recently. I happened on a Sunday morning to make a mistake. Probably not a mistake. But I was joking around a little bit about something, and I just, in a lighthearted way, said I don't believe in women preachers. Now, you know, we have guests out there. There was a woman that shared a testimony, and she just communicated well, and she talked about her salvation, different things. And I just made an offhand comment as a joke. People laughed. But I did have a visitor that took them back. Now, I think we need to be careful what we communicate, so especially when we have a chance to explain it. Now, I am not an egalitarian in marriage and even in the context of church leadership. I am complementarian. I think the Bible teaches clearly that men give leadership in the church and the home. And I think it's so clear in Scripture. I have convictions, and we need to communicate convictions with wisdom and tact, obviously. But this is healthy churches are Bible-preaching churches, truly healthy. You can have a big church that's not healthy in a biblical sense. So, relevant worship, I'm not talking worship style as much as where people really worship. You can have a traditional church worship where people are not truly worshiping. They're going through the motions. Another area is genuine community. Healthy churches are characterized by a genuine community, meaning there's a unity, there's a support, there's a love for each other. The one another's of the New Testament are important. Here's another one. Maturing leadership. Healthy churches have leaders who are godly. Now, you could talk about a lot of other things here. I'm just sharing some of the things that I think are important, and there's probably many more. Another one is financial stability. Resource understanding and stability. You're going to need resources if you're going to do outreach. You know what? It costs some money. Does that sound mercenary to you? But if you're going to do some things, if you're going to do some visibility ministries, if you're going to reach out in some ways, you're going to have to buy material. You're going to have training issues. You're going to need to do some publicity. It's going to cost money. In fact, it can cost some significant amount of money. But again, if you train your people understand they need to face the door and they understand the importance of what you're trying to do, then they'll write it into the budget. Outreach perspectives, they're important and significant. Okay, these are the foundational things. Probably think of other things. I guess I'm trying to say, if you want to do the top part, effective outreach, there's some foundation that I think needs to be laid to be sure that all that happens. So let me quickly jump in to the nuts and bolts. I want to define the elements. These are the elements of our evangelism strategy. Let me say a couple things about them. They should be in your outline, all these areas. Does everybody have an outline, by the way? I still have a few extras up here. Let me know if you don't. We have an eight-pronged approach. We have an eight-aspect approach to evangelism. And what we do is we try to do some things in every area. And you need that one? Thanks. Anybody else? Don't be bashful. You need one? Okay. Ron? Yeah. Okay, thanks. And I want to run by these, just tell you what they're about. And some of the things we do, I'm not trying to brag on South Baptist Church. In fact, we have some weaknesses that we're trying to address in our whole evangelism strategy. So, I could share them with you too, but overall, we're progressing in these areas, and I'll be able to talk a little bit about them. Visibility ministries are ministries that give your church and its ministry a visibility in the community. They are not frontline, share the gospel type ministries. All they do, all visibility ministries do, is let people know you're there. Because in order for you to minister to them, in some cases, they first have to know you exist. And unfortunately, some of our churches are the best kept secrets in our towns. So you need to have some visibility ministry. It's part of outreach. It's not real direct, and it's not real specific with the gospel, but we accept them as visibility. They're just part of being visible in the community, and I think they're important. Here's some areas of visibility. Signage. If you can put signs out on main roads. If you're not on a main road, you might not be visible in your community. Then you need to find ways to let people know on the main roads that you exist down the road. And we can talk about signage in your building, too. That's very important. And signage out front. We're working on some signage change for ourselves in the sign out front. Can I tell you a funny story? This just shows you how people are not facing the door. When I came to the church, there was a sign out front. And it had a block base, and it had South Baptist Church. For many years, they just had on the building some black letters on a lighter brick that said South Baptist Church. But they did, in the end of the 80s, they did put a little sign out front, South Baptist Church. And I said, you know what we need? We need more than just South Baptist Church. We need to let people know about times and activities. And I had, you might laugh, and maybe you wouldn't. I had some people say, but Pastor, we know what times the services are. Honestly, these are leaders. We know what time the services are. What's that? That's ingrown fortress mentality. It's not for you. It's not about you. We don't put the sign, the times. If I visit in a community, if I'm on vacation, and I see a church and go by, and I might be interested in visiting or something, I will look and see when their times are. Or I'll check their website. It's ingrown thinking. It's not thinking in terms of people out there and their impressions. Signage. Advertising. We've done billboards. Billboards are expensive. But we had some people who financed some billboards for us. And so we had a family picture and some notation. You don't want to have it to be too wordy. And it's about $1,000 a month for a billboard. So you might do it. You might target a month or two. And down in our area, that's what it is, might be different for you. We did television ads. We're not doing them now. But since I've been in Flint, we did some TV ads. And they were not real expensive. A little bit more to make. But there are companies that you can work with that will do a television ad. We did one around 9/11. After 9/11, had some pictures. And we talked about God, hope in God. And then we had our church name. And we got some feedback on some of those things. So those are just visibility issues. People know you're there. Mailings. I love the outreach marketing mailings. We mail these cards out to people new in the community. Only I do not send out those pretty cards with flowers and Happy Easter, and they're just beautiful. I send cards that people are going to look at that what in the world? Here's this people. You can't see it here. I wish I had projected this. About people's impressions of church, and it's got some goofy people going on the front. And the writing says, I'm not sure God exists. It's too boring. I don't have time. They want my money. And then on the back, I said, some things are worth a second look, and there's some information about our church. But most of the real religious-looking cars, people just throw them away. I don't want that. One of my favorites that we've used is the guy in the... he's in a jail outfit. You know, he's got the striped shirt, and he's got a ball and chain. And on the front it says, is this your idea of church? Well, I think people will read that. So a lot of the religious stuff they get in the mail, so we do mailings just to let people know we're there. It's part of visibility ministries. There are a lot of other things you could do. Compassion ministries. These are ministries that, you know, there's overlap. Visibility and compassion, there's some overlap in those. But compassion ministries are ministries we do to demonstrate God's love in a practical way. They're not real direct in evangelism areas, but we do a lot of this stuff. And I'll talk about some of the things we do. The random acts of kindness things. We do single ladies oil changes once or twice a year. And we change the oil for ladies. And we try to reach out. It's not for even our own ladies who are single, but those in the community. We have distributed stamps at the post office for free. We have gone door to door with smoke detector batteries. We have handed out pop on the corner. We have done all kinds of compassion ministry. Part of that compassion ministry is the backpack giveaway. I mean, we're just handing out backpacks because we care about people and want to let people know we care about them. It's a foundation. You know, some people would say, well, you know, you're just wasting all this. But you know what? It gives us visibility and lays the foundation for the next step of commitment and a chance to share Christ. And we think these kinds of ministries demonstrate in our community that we really care about the community and that we desire to help people. Some of the things, you know, emergency help, fire in a home in a development near your church or mine. That happened recently. What did we do? We got together some thousands of dollars and gave it to that family. It had nothing to do with our church. That family had nothing to do with our church. Why did we do that? Because we care about our community. And we want people to know that South Baptist Church cares about people. Because when they have a need and when they're struggling, where are they going to go? Hey, that church cares. And next weekend, teenagers, we're having about 70 of them with adults. We go to some areas around the church and rake leaves for people. Really, they cannot get over this. Because here's a crowd. Can you imagine? I am not looking forward to raking my leaves. I live in a wooded lot. Oh, man. If I could get a bunch of teenagers to come over and just rake, they rake it in like 10 minutes with that many people. It's all raked up. People say, oh, I want to give you money. What are you doing this for? We're just demonstrating God's love in a practical way. We care about you. We're around the corner. South Baptist Church, where people from the church just trying to help out. We're glad to rake your leaves. Stuff like that. We try to do things that demonstrate God's love in some practical ways. Lifestyle ministries. We try to train people in lifestyle evangelism. And we've had classes on weekends. We've had Sunday school times that we try to help people learn how to share their faith in the natural bridges of relationships that they have. That's part of our total evangelism strategy that we try to incorporate into all that we do. And I just wanted to mention that. I didn't mention, well, I don't need to mention it, but here's another area, target ministries. Target ministries are ministries that we have developed. And you know what? You probably have them. But they're specific ministries to groups of people that you're targeting and reaching. In other words, you might be in a college town, and you know there's a college nearby, so you've targeted outreach to that particular segment of your local culture, college students. It's just an example. It might be a ministry to moms. Some have the MOPS program, or there's some specific things where you're reaching out to moms. When I was in New York, we had a ministry to international students at the State University of New York, Binghamton. And they had an international student program, and we had connected with the leaders of that program to try to connect international students with families in our church. We were able to do some of that kind of thing. So there are target ministries that these are the kind of targets you could have, these kinds of of things, specific areas of outreach. Can I just tell you about one that's just really exciting for us? We are doing something really unique. Let me just tell you about this because it would maybe encourage you. We have connected with our local public school. Now, Flint, you understand, this is not small town school. This is like city school. They have over 5,000, between 5,000 and 6,000 students. This is Class A, Carmen Ainsworth High School, one of the leading, they've had a great athletic program through the years. They won the state basketball Class A championship 3 years ago. This is a big system, 800 teachers, 5,000 to 6,000 students. They're in trouble. It might not be true in some of your towns, but in the bigger cities, they're in trouble. Immoral problems, all kinds of issues related to the drug use and all these kinds of things. My associate, Will Payne, offered as a black guy to help the white basketball coach as a chaplain. And most of the players are black. So he said, oh, please, there just aren't that many quality, educated black males to be role models. So he became a chaplain, and that opened some doors for us. He had a great ministry the last couple years as a chaplain for the high school basketball team. And then that opened a door with the superintendent of the schools. And the superintendent said, I want to meet with you. He met with the superintendent of the schools, this big system. If I asked to meet with the superintendent of schools, local Baptist pastor, but because Will had spent some time with athletes, he got a hearing with the superintendent, and we proposed to the school that we could help them. And we went out on the limb. We hadn't talked to our people, but we said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll teach character in the public school. And we'll do tutoring, and we'll do mentoring, and we'll teach etiquette in the elementary school to young girls. And we will also, do some other special things just to support the school system. And they said, please do. We're the only school in Flint, or the only church in Flint, the only church in Flint Township in this entire district that's been asked to help. So my other associate, Don Chapin, goes into the high school and into one of the elementary schools, because we're limited in what we can do, and teaches character. They have a theme that they respect and responsibility. Now, we're not teaching them the gospel, but we're in the school system. I will be teaching in 2 days. I am now teaching a parenting class in the public school. I go on Thursday nights, and I teach parents, because a lot of parents are just clueless. And there are a lot of single parents, and they don't know how to be in charge. It's really a challenge. So what am I doing? They asked me to come in and teach parenting classes. So I have 6 weeks. I'll be doing it again in February. And these parents come in, and I do not give them the gospel, though I have more freedom. I do it at night. But I'm in the school. So they called us in this year. We did some of this last year. I didn't do the parent teaching. We just started etiquette training. It's called Girl Power. They do 12 girls in the elementary school are ladies. It's run by ladies in the church. They go to the public system. They have 12 girls once a week over a period of weeks, and they talk about manners and how to be a lady. I mean, the sign-up, we couldn't do them all. So many parents wanted their girls to get in on Girl Power. But anyway, so the funny thing happened this year. We got called in by the Board of Education. So Will and I go in there, board sitting around these board tables. We have some observers. And Will was kind of nervous, like, what are they going to do? They're going to probably say, you guys better not talk about God. I didn't know what they were going to do. And I said, Will, we're just going to tell them what we do. And maybe we get a chance to talk about Christ, even in this setting. So basically, we were totally taken back. We got in there. The principal of the two schools we work with got up and said that we were the greatest thing since sliced bread. They stood up and applauded us. We're sitting there like in a South Baptist church. The superintendent of school says this. He says, I can tell you something about South Baptist church. They over provide. Because what we had done is we had provided food for needy families through one elementary school. And some of our elementary schools are really needy. you know, kids barely have clothes to wear. So we provided food, baskets and different things. Only we didn't, they said some churches provide 5 or 6. We provided 50. We gave out backpacks. Other churches give backpacks. We gave out 400. So the superintendent says, these guys, you know, South Baptist Church has been meant so much to this school system. They've just, they go overboard. And like he was, the one woman on the side was in tears. I was really moved by it. I thought, man, if our people could see how much they appreciate what we do, it would, you know, they would continue to be moved. They gave the $10,000. It was not in our budget for all those backpacks. People gave it because why? You know why they? Because they get it. That's why they do it. They get it. They understand what we're doing. We're trying to reach our community. We're targeting the schools. I'll tell you in another year how it's going, because I don't know what other doors it's going to open. But I was in the parenting class last week, and a guy comes up to me. He's in the class. He says, my wife won't come. I'm having marital problems. Could you help me in my marriage? I said, I'd be glad to. Can you come down to church? And you know what I'm going to do when he shows up? I'm going to say, what you really need is Jesus in your life. And I get a chance to share Christ. You know, the door may close. When the ACLU finds out, so you don't, when you leave here, don't be, I don't think you ought to, you know, when the ACLU finds out. But, you know, reality is, we've targeted the public school system to try to demonstrate God's love in a practical way and to reach out to people in these different areas. And another great area that you could do is mentoring. Mentoring means I send some of my men, and they want men. They go down to the school system 1 hour a week, and they sit down with a special needs child. And I'm telling you, Steve Brown did this, one of our men. They think Steve Brown walks on water. Because what has he done? He's spent time with a kid that doesn't have a dad. He's not tutoring them, he's not teaching, he's just talking to them. The kid lives for it every week. This is a kid that they have trouble disciplining with. This is a kid that's a problem kid. But he looks forward to Steve coming, because Steve sits down with him and just talks about his life and tries to encourage him about school, and because he cares about them. There's a man that cares about them. They said to us, do you have any more people? We did a teacher. We decided, here's another thing we did in school. We decided we'd do a teacher appreciation dinner for free. There's 800 teachers. So I said to Will, I said, this is a great idea, but I'm a little nervous about 800. We can't even seat 800. Well, the superintendent said, there won't be 800 coming. And he was right. We only had 100. First year, last year. You know why? Because it's a Baptist church, and I'm not sure about those Baptists. There's people are still not sure, you know. What's the catch? But we came, they came, and I got a chance to tell them that thanks for serving in our community. You know, it's not easy. We know about some of the challenges in the school. We care about you. We wanted to give you a dinner because we wanted to demonstrate to you, you know, that we care about you. And I just tried to love on them, you know, tell them how great they were and all that kind of thing. And I went around and introduced myself, and then we had the superintendent spoke. We had, you know, a little bit of stuff like that. Non-threatening, nice meal. It was a catered meal. Cost us several thousand dollars. They left, and they went back and said, "Hey, there were no strings attached. It was really nice." You know, the superintendent said, "You better get ready for this year." So we set the date up in May for another teacher appreciation dinner for the public system. We invite them. Dinner's on us. You come. And he said, you're going to have probably 2 or 3 times at this time, because now they know a little bit more. So we picked a date. This is how it's going. This is an indication. And I'll conclude this part with this. Will and I landed on a date, because we couldn't do it later. And it was the only date we could really do in May. And he emails the superintendent, who he's on first name basis with now. He emails the superintendent and says it's on this date. And the superintendent says, that's a board meeting night for the school board, and I couldn't come, and the board members are supportive. But we said, well, that's the only date we could do. 2 days later, he emails back, and he says, the school board has changed their meeting. Tell me about a school board changing a meeting for a Baptist church event. I mean, come on. It just shows you some of the appreciation they have for what we're trying to do. Our prayer is that that target might result in fruit for the gospel. So we're really interested in it. And you know what? It's new ground. I've never done any of this before. It's brand new stuff. So we're just kind of giving it a shot. We're also talking about radio. You know why? Because out of the backpack, Sunday, two radio stations approached us. I haven't done radio, you know. I've thought about doing radio, but we had some people come to us because they want a church that's community sensitive to be on there. One radio station has no religious programming. I'm not interested in Christian radio, by the way. I am totally disinterested in Christian radio. I don't, you know, I'm not interested in entertaining the Christian public. We don't do concerts for Christian people. I'm interested in getting on radio stations that are just secular as they can be, because and one is 1330, which is sports radio, ESPN radio, approached us. The other one is B95 in Flint, which is country. They have no religious programming. But they came to us and said, you know, we probably ought to have a church on Sunday. Would you guys, you know what, would you guys, we're looking for a church that would be community sensitive that we can connect with. We can also advertise your events, your things in the school and all things you do. But we got to get funding. It's going to cost us $25,000 or so if we do those stations next year. I don't know how. We don't have the money, so I'm just praying that the money will come in. Because we're thinking about doing radio and trying to reach people with radio. It's a target area, anyway. A special events ministry, we do special events. These are one-time events that are outreach in nature. Their focus is outreach. And we do some of these kinds of things. Evangelistic concert, we run a day camp in the summer. We're going to 2 weeks of day camp. We stopped having VBS, and we really use a day camp as an extended VBS. And that ministry has really been blessed of God. We have holiday programs, sports events, friendship dinners, open houses. We already talked about some of those. These are special events, one-time events, that we use to share the gospel more specifically in a context of some type of an event like this. And there are many other types of things we do to try to reach people. Friendship dinners are off-site. We try to get in a motel banquet facility, and we have a meal and then share the gospel, and then people invite their friends. It's off-site. Sometimes that's helpful rather than at the church, so we try to do some of those events. These are some of our special events. Harvesting vehicles are more specific ministries that draw the net. And these are some of them. I believe in EE. We're not currently doing EE, but I have done Evangelism Explosion for years. And I think it's still effective and valuable. And it is more confrontational and more direct. And God has used it. Special services, street witnessing, evangelistic Bible studies. My wife, Jeannie, has written an evangelistic Bible study for women, published by Regular Baptist Press. We're working on one in Matthew together that will be for men and women. And you know what it is? It's a basic, simple, get into the book of Matthew and the gospel is clear. It's not deep stuff, but it's basic stuff for new believers. We do an evangelistic Bible study every Wednesday night for women using the Gospel of John book that she wrote. But we're going to be producing another one. And there are 8 to 10 women who are lost. Some of them are new believers, just studying the Bible for the first time through that kind of material. And many have been saved. That evangelistic Bible study, we have many women who have been saved through the women's ones that we primarily focused on. Evangelistic Bible studies are just great tools for sharing the gospel and bringing people to faith. Life Design is another ministry that Jeannie established that is an outreach ministry for women. And their luncheons that have a speaker and then share the gospel. And there's an organization for that. You could contact me if you'd like to have a structure for that particular women's ministry. It's outreach. It's not having lunch with your women friends from the church. It's about reaching lost women and inviting them to these things. Assimilation ministries. I think this is part of our big pie. This is part of the pie on outreach, assimilation. Here's some of our assimilation things. We have a welcome team. Greeters, ushers, parking attendants, we have a welcome center, we have a newcomer's reception. We've done things differently in different ways in those areas. We don't always use parking attendants, but we do for special events, but we always have greeters. Our ushers are part of that welcome team. The welcome center is a desk similar to what's out here where people come to get help. And then a reception for new people that visit on the day where we can greet them. Connecting programs are just some of our ministries that get people in a smaller group, so it's not just a big setting of church. Church membership strategies. I believe in church membership. It's very important. I have high standard for church membership, meaning I think membership is crucial in the ongoing growth of a person, and we have classes and we have responsibilities, and we think membership strength, your church will be strong if you have strong membership commitment and process. I think there's value in good memberships. Networking strategies are connecting people to ministry areas. Let's keep going. Discipleship ministries, we have a five-pronged discipleship approach. Naturally, if you're going to do evangelism, you have to think about what you're going to do with converts. And the issue is not, are they saved, but are they growing and maturing? We're really, this is an area we just need to keep working on. We have five areas. We have immediate follow-up of believers. In other words, we believe the evangelist, or whoever won them to Christ, should follow up. And we have a two-part instruction for any. If you lead your neighbor to Christ, we'll give you something to do to follow up on them. You affirm assurance, affirm the validity of the decision, but you should do it. We try to encourage you, anybody out there who leads a friend to the Lord, you should do the first follow-up. And then we will take it from there. We have trained new believer disciples to take 5 or 6 weeks through some material. And I wrote some material, part of my doctoral work at TEDS. And I am revising it right now, but it's 5 or 6 weeks on the basics of how to grow with an experienced, trained discipler. So the evangelist spends the first couple weeks, just make sure they're understanding, then passes it off to a discipler who then meets with them over a course of a few months, over 5 or 6 sessions. And then we have a discovery class, which is a group setting. I teach discovery and foundations on Wednesday nights, and they rotate. So we have small groups throughout the community and the church on Wednesday nights. We don't have a traditional prayer meeting. So part of that is I meet, and I've done this during Sunday school time, but I meet with newer believers in a discovery class. We go over the basics of growth again. And then foundations is basic doctrine, which follows that. And they're both about 8 to 10 weeks. Then there's upper level discipleship, which is for people who have been saved for a while and need to grow. Do you have a discipleship strategy? Somebody gets saved in your church, what do you do with them? You know what? In a lot of our churches, somebody turning the pages, a lot of our churches, well, come to Sunday school and hope you'll worship with us. You know that it won't cut it anymore. You got to spend time with new believers and show them how to grow. It's got to be done in a smaller setting. If you want to be really effective, some people will grow that way, but many will not. We need to be more proactive. Okay, implementing and we need to stop. Implementing, here's my suggestions for implementation. Pray. Seek God's direction. Bathe the strategy in prayer. Decide what you're going to do, and before you even get underway, talk to God about it. Get His direction. Understand His will. I like this article. I do not agree with all of his theology. Jim Cimbala wrote an article in Outreach Magazine. You know what? Outreach Magazine is all over the map theologically, but it's worth subscribing. If you are getting this, you need to read some things that are going to keep you creative. Outreach Magazine is pretty broad. I like to read things that are not exactly where I'm at. It helps me understand what I believe, too, and how whacked some people are in some of these things. But anyway, Outreach Magazine published a good article, The Invisible Side of Outreach. What's the invisible side of outreach? The part you don't see? People praying. You establish these ministries, get people praying. Get people who pray regularly for these Bible studies and these outreach events, for your open house, for whatever it is. Prayer is important. Evaluate circumstances and resources. You know what? Don't jump in if you're not prepared. What is your demographic? If you're going to target, you need to think through who you can reach in your community. What is your community like? Who are the people you could reach? What kind of experience do you have? What kind of resources do you have? What kind of funding? What kind of people with gifts? You evaluate all that. When I first came, we didn't have any welcome team. And we didn't have a discipleship strategy, and we didn't have a lot of these things. And the plan was to look at the community, kind of figure out how we could move ahead, and then begin slowly, carefully, to teach our people about the funding necessity and the training issues, and we just get started. But you got to evaluate where you're at now. All of you are doing some type of evangelism, and you can sometimes just strengthen it or focus it or redirect it or begin to... You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to do something in every area of the pie. I wanted to do something for visibility. I want to have some advertising. If you don't can't do anything else, at least do Yellow Pages. It's probably the, you know, it's not as important as it used to be, but or a good website today, that's so important. But try to do something, even if it's small, in each of those categories, and then begin to grow them. Just try to grow them. Well, you need to talk with your leadership and strategize what you're going to do first based upon your resources, the needs in the community. You're going to kind of make that happen. Someone's reminding me that it's noon. And then fourthly, recruit, train, qualified servants, work the plan. That's important. You have to find the workers. You know what? You can't do this yourself. I've got a great group of people. We went over at Will and I not too long ago. We've got 90 people involved in outreach ministry in the various areas, welcome team, training in this area, doing this and that. I mean, just a bunch of people. Some people are just, I mean, that would include some of our ushers and different, but the people that are involved in assimilation or greeters or, you know, we just got a lot of people doing those kinds of things. We have people that are committed. Well, I'm doing this teaching. You know, on Thursday night, I'm going back to the school. I'm going to teach again. We have a team of ladies that come and provide dinner for free, and then we have teenagers and some others that provide babysitting. We got a bunch. Why? Because they get it. How would they want to spend another night, especially after Wednesday nights are busy, to go to a school cafeteria, serve dinner, and hang out with a bunch of wild, smelly kids? Why? Because we're trying to. I mean, there's a lot of people involved, but they need some training. And you got to recruit them to do effectively. It involves people, resources too. And then lastly, grow and expand as God leads and resources allow. Now, those are my suggestions about outreach strategy. I have a burden that as churches, we would be not only orthodox, theologically sound, but we'd be intentional and proactive in reaching our communities. You know, that's what we really need. You know what the fellowship needs? It needs churches that move beyond the fortress mentality and say, I'm going after my community and lost people so that I can share Christ with them and really make a difference. You know what? In some ways, this is obvious. Do you remember the story? Sherlock Holmes. I conclude with this. Sherlock Holmes and Watson. Camping out under a tent one weekend, the open, you know, pitch the tent in the open field. Holmes wakes up in the middle of the night and he looks up. This is a familiar story. He looks up and he nudges Watson. He says, "Look up and tell me what you deduce." And he looks up and he says, "Well, I see billions and billions of stars. And some of those stars and some of those things probably represent constellations. And maybe some have oxygen and there's maybe life on some of those." And Holmes interrupts him and says, No, you dummy. Somebody stole our tent." See, sometimes you can miss the obvious. If you have a statement in your constitution that says the purpose of the church is Matthew 28:19-20, then it's time to take it seriously, not just the second half, but the first half. Seems to me that would be obvious. Now, you want to go eat, but you know, I wish I'd left some more time for interaction. Do you have a question or a comment, and then I'm going to conclude? Yeah. Okay, our open house is an opportunity to invite the community to our church. Now, I don't want to upset you, but what we do is we have a service, we invite the community, we handed out backpacks, we got a bunch of inflatable games, we provided dinner on the grounds, and they did games. If that disturbs you on a Sunday, you might not want to do that. That's what we did, and we put them right out front. So people drive by, they see that this church, and there's a bunch of kids and families, and we stay through a good part of the afternoon with these families. Just a big deal in our community. We did it on Saturday for a while. We found out Sunday to get them into church. Because you know what? We had all these school people there. I shared the gospel. Now, I don't mean that we don't ever on a Sunday morning share the gospel. It was an evangelistic message. on that Sunday morning. They heard the word. The superintendent of school, the school board, they were all there. And I laid it right out there for them on how to know Jesus. So we found out that Sunday is a good opportunity for that because they come to worship or come to our setting. Those that don't know the Lord are not really worshiping, but they're observing all that, and then they get the gospel. So that's what we do on that day. There's another hand. Okay. Doug, you were going to say something? Okay, the Evangelistic Bible Studies, I've been primarily focused on women, and Jeannie, my wife, wrote a book called Meeting Jesus in the Gospel of John. It's published by a regular Baptist press. It's a great introductory Bible study for women that takes them right into the Scripture. It's not touchy-feely, and it's good hermeneutics. It's right from the Scripture. with men, we have used other published materials. What was the first question again? The lifestyle. We have used some the Contagious Christian we have used in the past. And then we've written some of our own material. Yeah.
You mentioned disability ministry there in the church. You have a team of people reaching out to people with disabilities?
Well, we do. We have a ministry to the mentally disabled, but we also have a building. We build a building with no stairs. And I think the people in the church were ahead of themselves because the original part was built in 68. But there isn't a stair in the place. And we made provision as we've expanded for trying to reach out to some. We have people that come currently in wheelchairs. But we also have some. We do have a special class for the mentally disabled. So we've reached out in some ways with that. That's an area we could do better in. In the times past, you know, we've had some deaf ministry. That's another target ministry. Very difficult and challenging. I've done deaf ministry. But physically disabled, mentally disabled, yeah.
You mentioned like the events that you have, special events, people invite their friends. Are they developing those friendships in the world because of the lifestyle management training, or is that something that they need to be encouraged to do?
Well, they need to be encouraged. Because all of us get sloppy and we're not thinking about our neighbors and trying to reach out effectively. So some of it is the training, but some people don't need training. There are some people that get it because they see the need in their neighborhood, and some people are in tune with outreach. You know, they're in touch with it. Some people need to be reminded, some need training. But we all need motivation, and we all can benefit from an opportunity. I'm witnessing to my coworker, and I'm talking to him. I wish there was somebody else that could talk to him. Well, bring him to a dinner theater. Nice meal, drama production, and the gospel right in his face. You know, in a tactful way. So, I mean, I think it involves some encouragement and training. People in our church now are getting it more and more. There's some people that don't. We'll have a dinner theater, and some people just come by themselves. They don't get it. We have a friendship dinner. We try to say you can only come if you bring a lost friend. But, you know, we're not real strict with that. I mean, you can't. No. So some people come because it's a nice dinner. They don't get it. They don't understand what we're trying to do. They think it's a fellowship time for... So there'll always be some that don't get it, but we hope more and more people are getting it. Does that make sense? Yeah. We target athletes. Upward Basketball is a great ministry if you're interested. But I'll tell you what, it'll suck the life out of you if you don't keep it under control. We're going to have over 300 kids. And we have all colors, all backgrounds. The Upward Basketball program, you know what Upward is for us? Outreach. If you're looking for a basketball for your kids in your children's ministry, yeah, you can do it a lot cheaper and a lot better maybe by yourself. But if you want to reach kids and young families, we have an Upward Basketball program that we run January to March, and well over half of the kids and their families are lost. And here's the thing about Upward. They show up on Saturday. All of our games are Saturday. We're going to add 2 hours. We're going to start at 8 in the morning and end at 5 at night. Run two side-by-side courts. We have a pretty big gym. Every halftime, everything shuts down, teams go off. I have 7 minutes And I just, you know, the parents are in the stands, they're watching, their parents are going to come, I just share Christ. Or we have others that come in. We had a missionary come in and talk about, and they hear it for 8 weeks. It's an 8-week program. They hear the gospel every halftime. We just share the gospel with them. It's so easy. I mean, and you know what? They'll listen. They're sitting there. I mean, some of them are not really paying attention. But what a great opportunity. You talk about a captive audience. So they hear the gospel. And we've had people get saved. We've had some people get saved through those devotional times. They've come and asked more questions. And so it's an to us, it's an outreach ministry run by our men's ministry. So Life Design is run by our women's ministry, even though it's an outreach event. But it is an event. We view Upward as a target to young athletes. So it's a target ministry for us that's run by the men's ministry. I didn't let you go. Let's pray. If you want to talk more or you want some information, email me or call me. I'd be glad to give it to you. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for a chance to talk about outreach. And Lord, I just pray that you just fire us all up with the importance of touching our communities, reaching people for Christ, being creative, innovative, and seeing some things happen that will really honor you. May we be true to your word, committed to our theology, but willing to consider methodology adjustment to reach people that doesn't compromise our convictions. Meet needs in each person's life, each leader that's represented here in the churches and our fellowship. God bless them. All of us as we together try to be the lighthouses in our community that we need to be. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks.